We have begun
very
Vegas
loud.
Month.
Very loud.
Yeah, hopefully.
Let's keep starting this way.
Yeah.
What the hell's wrong with my earphones?
You got to turn it down.
You just got to turn them down.
Oh,
over there.
Bill, I don't know how to work all your stuff.
Oh, Michael, I'll fix it for you.
A lot of cables. Fix me. Yeah. Fix my headphones. I'll wait.
I'll be fixing Felix. Don't worry.
All right. Fine.
I'm good. This is the podcast version.
Yeah, right.
You're right.
Oh, Christ.
All right. Welcome in, everybody, to That Diva
Month.
Show.
Yeah, That Diva Show.
Bill, fix my ears. Better.
There
better.
It is.
There you go.
There you go.
Cool. All right.
So good.
Vegas Month on That Movie Show.
Yeah.
Here on New Age Insiders Pop. And we're live on twitch.tv/NewAgeInsidersTV. Doing the thing, man.
Yeah.
We are live. And we're talking Martin Scorsese's Casino, if you couldn't tell by the groovy sound effects.
Or the trailer.
Well, that too. But some people, if they're watching back or listening back, they're not going to get it. We tend to reference the trailer a lot and then realize, shit, copyright. Yeah. We had to cut it out.
We had to cut it out. That's right.
That's why you got to watch live.
Yeah.
Watch us live.
Absolutely.
That Movie Show, Mike Wendt, Liam Stryker, Bill Neville, fixing my ears behind the board, and we are covering 1995's Casino.
Yeah.
It was released November 22nd, 1995, had a budget of $40 to $50 million. I love when there's a variance there. $40 to $50 million. Came back with $116.1 million at the box office. It was directed by Martin Scorsese, written by Martin Scorsese and Nicholas Pileggi. I'm going to go with Pileggi.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry. He's also the guy that wrote the book. It starred Robert De Niro, Sharon Stone, Joe Pesci, Don Rickles, Kevin Pollak, James Woods, Frank Vincent, and a slew of other notable Scorsese characters.
Yeah, of course.
Including his mom.
Yeah.
Who has some of the greatest outtakes on the Blu-ray ever.
Really?
So I'm just going to do that part because I fell in love with her immediately when I saw these outtakes. I mean, she's been in all of Martin's movies, but so she's in the scene with Artie Piscano.
Okay.
And she's playing his mom. Yeah. And he's in there and he's pissed off because he has to keep going to Vegas. And he's the one that started keeping the books.
Yeah.
And they had dropped a wire. We'll cover it, but I just wanted to get this scene out of the way. And they dropped a wire and they're listening.
Yeah.
And he keeps cursing and she's sitting there like every time he says fuck, she like drops her, she's cutting peppers and she drops her knife. She's like, come on, Artie, watch your language.
Yeah.
So in the outtakes, you hear the camera's on her. And it's rolling, and you hear Martin Scorsese directing the guy playing Piscano.
Yeah, okay.
And she's just sitting there, and she's legitimately just sitting there cutting peppers. And you hear Martin Scorsese's voice go, "All right," and then you start saying "fuck," and she just goes, "Marty, watch the language." And I'm like, "It's really his mom."
Yeah, that's funny.
And he's a grown man at this. It's hilarious.
Yeah, it's Martin Scorsese.
She is adorable.
That's fun.
But yeah, so we are covering Casino today.
Yeah, one of my favorite Scorsese movies.
It's so good.
I like this one. This is probably one of my favorites of his.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I gravitate towards this one. I think maybe it's the setting. I like the setting a little bit more than some of his other films.
Okay.
Just because Taxi Driver, De Niro's great, but it's kind of weird that he like falls in love with that underage prostitute.
Yeah, 70s.
Yeah, 70s.
It was a different era.
Raging Bull is good, but since Raging Bull, we've had better boxing movies.
Sure.
And then, it's kind of a toss-up. I always think that the Goodfellas is always kind of at the top of the Scorsese list.
Mm-hmm.
But I just like this one a little bit better.
Okay.
Maybe I just like the flow of it a little bit more.
Maybe.
That might be it.
So we're in all of it. This is your favorite? You would say number one with a bullet is Casino?
It goes back and forth. I mean, I really like his catalog. He's one of my favorite directors, period.
Sure.
Goodfellas, Casino, Cape Fear I really like as well.
Kundun. You ride with Kundun?
Yeah. And then
that great line from The Sopranos where they see him in a club and Michael Imperioli's like, "Marty, Kundun! I liked it."
Yeah, right.
No, you didn't.
Nobody did.
Nobody liked Kundun.
nobody did. I'm also a big fan of Gangs of New York.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I mostly because it's such a departure from those other gangster movies that he had done.
Sure.
You know, I mean, Martin Scorsese is kind of also the response to or the cause of the mafioso flick, right? Everybody, he's one of the first directors.
Him and Coppola, basically.
Right, but him like in a college setting, right? Sure, sure. Like when you go to college, everybody does a gangster movie, which is so funny because you think about it.
Oh, you mean like film school kids?
Film
like
school
college
kids.
Films, yeah.
Yeah, you know, because like this is between this and
Scarface has a lot to do with that, probably too.
Scarface, it's basically Tarantino and Scorsese that end up causing that, right?
Everybody wants those skinny black ties in their movie, don't they?
Yeah, everybody Jesus. Wants those. You know, but that's
you know, it's funny. My buddy went to Merrimack, and I was kind of his actor in those. And
right?
Yeah, we did one.
Yeah, everybody's just done one.
I was 16 years old in like a black suit trying to play a heavy, and I'm just like, yeah. I watch it back because I actually found the tape.
Yeah, right.
And I pulled all the footage onto the computer so I would have it. And I'm like, oh my God, I was so young trying to be a tough guy.
Yeah, right. You know? Well, that's the funniest.
Sitting there smoking my Parliament lights.
Yeah, that's the funniest thing is you got a bunch of people that are in their like early 20s that are all like trying to be intimidating mafiosos.
Yeah, we're trying to look tough and talk like Tarantino writes.
You know what I mean? And it's just like, but it's because you get access to this movie, right?
Right.
And something like a Casino or a Goodfellas or Pulp Fiction or Reservoir Dogs kind of sparks that inspiration in a lot of early filmmakers. You know, I remember one time I was sitting in film school and the way the classes kind of broke out was my entire class had something in the morning and then we had like a 2-hour break and then we had another class in the evening and Casino came on. And it was a director. It was like a, you know, like a cinematography class.
Okay.
And so I'll never forget, we started watching Casino, but this movie's like 3 hours long.
On the dot, it's 2 hours and 59 minutes.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's 3 hours long. And so we had like another 45 minutes left in this movie, and it's on TV, right? Mm. And so...
Oh, so Jesus, you had commercials,
too? It was like 4 hours,
ooh,
right? And so
nice.
So we were like close to finishing it, and everybody... it was like we had all gotten this far, and so only a couple of people went to class.
Was this in a class? Oh, it wasn't in a class.
It wasn't in a class. This was during a break.
Oh, okay.
But then our cinematography professor came and actually like into the school lounge and basically had the rest of the class come with him.
Mm-hmm.
And we basically just watched Casino while he just did like cinematography DVD commentary over it. So it was kind of cool. It was kind of a cool experience.
That's kind of neat.
And I think that's also probably one of the reasons why I like this movie so much.
Well, it's beautifully shot.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a Scorsese movie. That goes kind of without saying. He does amazing jobs. He's been ripped off many times, including Tarantino. You know, has taken many of the shots. That famous, what's become the Tarantino trunk shot?
Yes.
Was from Goodfellas.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's right where he got it from.
That's exactly where it's from.
And if we went back, I'm sure you probably saw it in Mean Streets and Taxi.
Yeah. Like
that, it was a Scorsese shot that he did. And yeah, this one was gorgeous. Just, it's weird because he doesn't do short movies.
No.
And there are
Goodfellas seems short.
Does it though?
Yeah.
Oof, it gets a little rough in the later portion of it.
Yeah.
Like that once they make that time jump and I the only way to describe it is when De Niro's character has gray hair as opposed to black hair.
Yeah.
It's like that's a long.
It's 145 minutes.
It just that back end always feels it's
kind of feels long.
It's the not pacing, but it's not bad.
No, the pacing slows down in that back
half. It
does,
and it's not like it's not one of those things like a Full Metal Jacket where it's like, oh, I wish we were back in basic training. It's like you're enjoying the time you're. It's just like it does. It downshifts real quick.
Yeah,
but this doesn't really downshift.
No, it stays consistent throughout the entire thing, and if anything, it ramps up, right? Because by the time we get to the stuff with Ginger driving into the house, basically, and
it keeps I mean, it's a movie fueled on cocaine, and it keeps that pace, like especially in those moments,
right,
when the characters are all fucked up on cocaine,
right.
It's like you feel that because it's just that the way he's cutting and the way the music's slamming.
Yeah, the other thing too that I kind of it's really fun watching these movies again because it's like, yeah, I've seen Casino a million times, but now I'm. Because of this show, watching so many things that it's very interesting watching these movies in conjunction with each other because I actually felt a lot of the same things I felt about Boogie Nights.
Okay.
With this, where it feels like it's also a story of people that outlive the time. So like you in Boogie Nights, mm-hmm. right? It's the porn going from like actual real cinematic movies right. that they're making to like, yeah, we're just gonna bang in the back of this limo
with
and
a VHS
film it.
Camcorder. Yeah.
Right. And that's how we're gonna make porn from now on. And it's the same thing with this, where it's like De Niro's character even says it towards the end, where it's like, yeah, all the old casinos got bought out by mm-hmm. these giant corporations and everything changed and it was different and the money wasn't there anymore and it ends up to
the
where
shot, the end shot of the senior citizens walking in their running pants. I mean, yeah, that's what it became. Yeah,
you know, and it's really interesting because it, you know, I wouldn't have put those two things together
right.
had I not seen them in that
in
order
such close proximity.
In such close right. proximity, you know. And
there's
so,
there's a movie I always tell people they need to watch this movie because it's very unseen, but yeah. it's really good and it takes place right around. It's not in the same time. It's modern time, but it's a look at that end of a Vegas era, and it's called The Cooler.
Okay, with William H. Macy.
William H. Macy, Alec Baldwin, Maria yeah. Bello, Ron Livingston's in it, and it's so good. And right. it's a 90-minute movie. It's a quick right. watch, but it's so well done. It's dark as fuck.
Yeah.
It is a really dark movie, but it's just that last bastion of old Vegas.
Right.
And that's the whole plot of the movie. Like, Ron Livingston's character comes in, and he's, like, trying to, you know, for lack of a better term, Mickey Mouse it up.
Right.
And Alec Baldwin's this old-school casino guy that still employs Coolers, which is the name of the movie.
Right.
You know, and he's like, I want this. I don't want the glitz. I don't want the glamour. I don't want this to become what Times Square has become.
Right.
I want this to be old world Vegas. And he's just like, people don't do that shit anymore, man.
Yeah, right.
We need to replace Paul Sorvino, the opera singer, with Joey Fatone, the boy band.
Yeah,
you know right. what I mean? That's what's going to bring the chicks in. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
And that's a very condensed version of what Casino is.
Right.
Because we carry these characters through...
decades.
40 years? 30 years at least?
Something like that. It's nuts.
I mean, when they start back home,
yeah.
Which one of the facts I found was it was the lawyers at Universal had a lot to do with the script, because yeah. this is very much based on real people.
Yeah, of course. Yes. Yep. There's a whole museum. There's a whole gangster museum in Las Vegas mm-hmm. where they basically tell you the story of Casino, but with the real people.
There was a point that Pesci looked so much like the actual, the guy's name was Tony the Ant Spilatoro.
Okay.
Who was the violent psychopath who busted heads for De Niro's character, who was, the big thing the lawyers came in and did was change all the names.
Yeah.
Right off the bat, like, you got to change all the names. It was Frank Lefty Rosenthal was okay. turned into Sam Ace Rothstein. Ginger was a real character. Nikki was a real character. You know, there was back home was Chicago.
Right.
But yep. in the script, the word Chicago never happens. Like, even yeah. in descriptive things, they're like, you cannot write that.
Yeah, right.
Because the lawyers were so worried because this is
yep.
real mobsters.
Yeah.
This is a real mafia yeah, you're fucking with.
Yeah, we don't want people coming in and start going missing.
No, absolutely not. So there was a lot of you know, very very careful legal steps that were taken to make this movie. It was shot in the real Riviera.
Yes.
An operating Riviera, which usually doesn't happen. Usually they build a casino set because in Vegas, they don't close.
No, they don't.
And Vegas, any casino really, is very particular about, especially shooting on the gaming floor.
Right.
There's a lot of loopholes and jumps and hoops you got to jump through. So basically, Scorsese made the argument to them where they were allowed to film from, I believe it was midnight to 10 a.m.
Yeah.
Monday through Thursday.
Right, when nobody was
nothing
there.
On the weekends.
Yeah.
You know, and you got that time frame, and that's where you can work in our casino.
Right.
And it was funny because of that. If you look closely, there's a lot of Riviera signs all over the place.
Oh, of course.
Like, they're just having a random conversation on a park bench. It just happens to be the bench that has a Riviera banner.
Yeah.
In one of the restaurant scenes with Sam and Ginger, yeah. You can see the Riviera sign. It's like, it's not supposed to be there.
No.
Anyone who knows Vegas knows it doesn't take place there.
Right.
Even stuff like the exterior was, it wasn't the Riviera. The Tangiers was actually, if you look closely, the front of the Flamingo.
Yes,
and the only reason I know is because I've stayed there.
I've stayed at the Flamingo, and
like, that's the Flamingo.
That's how I knew,
because
that was at that point. And again, I've been to Vegas twice.
Yeah,
and one time was as a child.
Okay. Go on.
So my aunt and uncle got married in Vegas. So my mom's side of the family flew out to Vegas. So I was like 14 at the time.
Oh, so you were like, you had the temptations, well, but you couldn't do anything about it.
Right. Because
you were old enough to be like, I want to go have fun over here.
Yeah. Everything looks so fun over here. Right. It's neon lights and everything's like going wild over there. Cool thing, though, is I did get to go see, my parents took me to see Siegfried and Roy.
Oh, that's neat.
And so that was really cool. So that was pre-Tiger Mauling. So
yeah, obviously.
Yeah, yes, because that was a long time ago. But yeah, it was really fun. And then the last time I went to Vegas as an adult, and we stayed at the Venetian.
Ooh, the Venetian.
Which I would highly recommend to anybody. Well, slash, if somebody that works in the Venetian or the Palazzo wants to put us up,
sure.
I'll come.
We'll go and do movie reviews from there.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can do that.
Yeah,
you guys know. I mean, actually, the reason we're doing Vegas month is at the end of the month, I'm going to Vegas.
Right.
I'm staying at the Hooters.
That sounds so fun.
As you do.
Yeah, as you do.
As you do. I didn't even know Hooters had a casino. So the quick story about it.
Yeah.
This was all done in a group chat, and it was done when I was at a family party. So I was trying to, like, be at the family party, but also, like, looking at my phone, and I'm like, and I just didn't understand the conversation. It was like, we're going to Vegas. And then I kept seeing the word Hooters in there.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a group of guys that usually go to Hooters to watch football games. And I'm like, and I just fucking called. I mean, called my buddy Will. I'm like, are we going to Hooters tonight? And he's like, no, the casino Hooters. I go, that's a thing?
Yeah, there's a casino.
That's a thing?
That seems weird.
A casino hotel. Yeah, Hooters branded casino hotel, which is where we're going and we're staying. And the group chat has gotten very scary with all the amount of guns that we're going to be playing with on the week. So
yeah,
that's fun. Somebody found a thing where you can pay money to drive a tank over cars.
Yes.
Yeah. And they will come pick you up in a Humvee limo.
Yep.
Bring your party out to the desert. A lot of fucking holes are buried in the desert. A lot of problems are solved out in the desert.
Yeah.
And and then you drive tanks over cars.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sounds about right.
That's a thing. You can blast miniguns into cars like Arnold Schwarzenegger in T2.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a thing.
Yeah.
Oh,
just Gatling guns.
Gatling. Yeah, absolutely. Why not? Why not? Fucking Wild West. We're going to Wild West this shit.
Yeah,
so let's jump into the movie.
Yeah. I love this movie. This movie's great. You look at it, it starts with Robert De Niro basically being a part of the Teamsters Union, which is the code for the mob.
Right.
It's code for the mob.
Right.
And so they basically send him out to, they end up sending him out to Vegas because he's a handicapper, basically. He's the best handicapper, but that's...
We start in 1973.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so that's where he lives, right? Or he's sent out there to kind of...
To run the casino that they have.
Run the casino. This is it. You're the best handicapper we have. We need you to run this casino. And so basically he brings out his buddy, his childhood friend, Joe Pesci.
Well, they send Nicky.
Yeah.
Because De Niro gets very comfortable very quick.
That's right.
In this legitimate casino. Because De Niro's character wasn't a mobster.
No, he was
just good at gambling.
Right. And
especially sports gambling. And he made the mobsters a lot of money.
Right. So they're sending him out there so that he can just make them more money.
Nicky's just a guy that stabs a guy with a pen at the bar.
Yeah.
He's that part of their life.
Yeah, right.
Ace makes some money. Nicky stabs guys in the pen with a pen. You know,
he needs it.
You need the yin and the yang when you're doing this thing. But he gets very comfortable in Vegas.
Yeah, he does.
Running the Tangiers.
Right, because it's very easy and he's making a lot of money.
It's what he knows.
Right.
I mean, he's literally in his paradise. He's able to just do gambling 24/7.
Right.
And what he does.
Right. And so...
Without a gambling license.
Yeah.
Which the actual guy didn't... He did the same thing. Operated without a... gaming license, yeah.
Oh, wow. And so
there's a lot of real shit in this. Yeah, my research was not, I didn't even have to try too hard, but there's a lot of real shit in here.
Yeah. So basically Joe Pesci shows up.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe Pesci immediately just starts fucking shit up.
Yep.
Like, he ends up getting banned from all the casinos.
Yes, he gets Al Capone black booked.
You know, and so
there's two names in there. One of them's Al Capone, the other one's you. Yeah, right.
And so he ends up basically just burglaring.
Oh, yeah.
And just rolling
heads. Again, you know, it's one of those things where, like I just said, that Ace was in his element because he just had to do gambling 24/7 and it's legal.
Yeah.
So he was enjoying not having to be in danger all the time.
Right.
I can do this and this is allowed.
Right.
Nicky comes out and he's in his own paradise because they, at the time, had never seen this type of mafia in Vegas. And right. it was all, like you said, it's all cowboys and shit.
Yeah.
And so he comes in and just starts robbing everybody.
Yeah. And it's bad.
Well.
Well, it's good for him.
In a manner of speaking.
Yeah. You know, and so that's kind of the world that we live in. Yep. You know, the story kind of takes another turn when we're introduced to Ginger.
Yep.
An ex prostitute and just a
is she an ex? He met her at the casino when she was throwing a guy's chips around.
Yeah, I thought that was always more of like her being more of like a con artist, because it felt like she ends up being more of a con artist than a prostitute, but I guess they go hand in hand.
I mean, you know, yeah, you make a buck here, you make a buck there. It's Vegas.
I guess you're you right know? I guess you're right.
She comes home to Lester Diamond, gives him a cut.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Somebody's getting fucked.
Played by the ever awesome James Woods.
Of course. One of his great roles.
Yeah. I mean, he's
so
very
sleazy.
He's very fun at who he is, much like Any Given Sunday, which we'll have to do.
I always feel like these two guys are connected.
Yeah, that they're the same person.
They have the same moral compass, it is just not existent. Yeah, right. There isn't one.
There isn't one. Yeah, and so
we will do Any Given Sunday.
We have to. Sam basically falls in love with Ginger, and they start dating.
Sam was a sucker.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'm sorry, but really, dude?
Yeah, how do you fall for this chick?
And how does Don Rickles not say, like, hey, man.
Yeah, get out of this.
There's plenty of good-looking girls in this casino.
Right.
Why you gotta go with the one that's gonna shake you down?
Yeah, right.
I mean, it doesn't take a brain surgeon to see where this girl is coming from.
Yeah, right. And it's like,
and they immediately jump right into it, because it's they're the first date on screen when they're at the restaurant, right. And he's putting the fucking big diamond pin on her dress, and she's like, oh, I'm gonna go powder my nose. And he gives her a 50 to go to the bathroom, and she sits there, and he gives him another 50. So she takes off to the bathroom with $100.
Right.
And he even says it in the narration. It's like, yeah, she pocketed the fucking money. I didn't give a shit about that. It's like, yeah. Did you?
Yeah, right.
I understand that these guys are making ass loads of money, yeah. And money doesn't mean a lot to them, the amount of money right. that they have. But that's why she's with you.
Right, exactly.
It has nothing to do. And finally, when the relationship starts to fall apart, he's like, you never loved me. It's like, no shit.
Yeah, right.
No shit.
Yeah, no shit. I didn't love you.
Dynamite drop in Sam. Captain Obvious over here. She never loved you because you married her and gave her a closet full of jewels.
Right. They end up roughing up. They end up roughing up fucking James Woods.
A couple of times.
And basically, yeah, just that's basically
Lester Diamond. What a great name.
Lester Diamond. He's trying to get money out of Ginger. Like, so that kind of,
well, he's not trying. He's straight up getting money. And it started with him just collecting money from her. Right. And then once she married Sam, it was like she'd just randomly asked for money here. And she obviously had an allowance account type of thing that she was siphoning off to him. But it was when she came out and was like, I need 25 grand.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And he's like, why?
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 And she wouldn't tell him. I mean, come on. You're a con artist. Make up a lie. Like, right. I mean, you should be able to have these lies.
Good to go.
Rapid fire. Already one in the chamber.
Before you asked for the $25,000, you should have constructed it.
It's not. Yeah. I mean, even he's like, it's not like you're asking for a couple $100 or $1,000. Right. 25 grand. It's like, now I want to know.
Yeah. Now. Yeah. Right. Now I got to know. What are you spending 25 grand on?
So he doesn't give it to her.
No.
She ends up going to the bank where, when they got married, Sam put $2 million in safety deposit boxes as like a shakedown or kidnapping money if he ever gets taken, because he is in the business.
Right. Yeah. So if he ever gets occupied, she's going to come to give that ransom money so that he can come home.
If he gets tied up, literally or figuratively.
Yeah.
She's the only one with possession of the key, where we get the bank manager scene where he's like, you must really trust your wife. And the audience is like, don't do it.
No. Don't.
This is going to go bad.
Yeah, and sure enough, it does.
She takes 25 grand out, puts it in an envelope, takes it to a shitty diner on the edge of town, and is then met with Ace and Nikki and a bunch of hoods.
Yeah.
A bunch of hoods there. They drop their Lucky Strike cigarettes and beat the shit out of James Woods.
Yep. And he gets his ass beat.
Oh, bad, yeah. The beatings in this movie are really good.
Oh, they're
like, really well done.
Yeah, we'll get to...
They're very violent.
Yeah, we'll get to Nikki's later, because that's one of my favorite
scenes ever.
Yeah, I mean, it's just it. They did a the violence they did very well in this movie,
right?
And this is before the age of any digital shit. It's all practical,
right?
You know, you're getting punched and you got your sponge of blood in your mouth. Yeah. You know what I mean?
It's, right.
They did a really good job on it. And yeah, so we got a and Nicky is starting to cause a little bit more problems.
Right.
Has he been black booked yet?
He's already been black booked.
So he's already opened the gold rush.
Yeah.
Which another great scene.
Right.
That whole pan across of this all the guy and he's introducing everybody. I'm not going to go down all their names. But it's like it's just panning across the windows of all these just hoods sitting there looking out the window mean. And then it gets to him and he's in the fucking hard foreground. I'm like, yes.
Yeah, right.
The Stones are playing.
Oh, yeah. Yep. We couldn't afford the Stones, so we had the tumbling rocks.
Not tumbling dice, though. Tumbling. See, he does Vegas, too.
Yeah, he does.
I hear we're getting good recommendations for more dice.
Oh, God.
People want to hear dice a lot on this show, as they should, because it is one of the most terrifical impressions you'll ever hear.
Speaking of dice, I'm hearing those one-star reviews rolling in.
I am loving them. That's because I'm the one star here. That's what I am. Yeah. I'm a fucking star.
Thank you.
And I do the Vegas thing at the casino. Knows right,
yeah.
Like I'm telling you, here's and then I do the show and I go, I do a little gambling and you know I get the broads. They come to the shows,
right?
And I turn them on. It's not too fucking hard. Hickory dickory, yay! You know it's the same act from there. See, and then I'm a slot guy, not the slot guys, but a slot guy. I drop a couple coins. I can do this forever until somebody fucking interrupts me.
I'm gonna see how long you can go.
So to summarize,
yes,
in order to stop dice, you have to allow us to do a Ford failing.
Okay,
that's good. But I want people, your people gotta vote for that. They gotta send in the Twitters.
Oh god.
And the my faces
it. I'll vote for it.
The insta shams,
fine. Anyway, as
send it to my phone. That's how I get it. The email. Send me that on my phone. The text tweets.
Of course. So I forgot where we are. Basically,
tumbling dice.
Yeah. The Nikki and Sam.
What was that?
That was the
sound. The alarm. Dice is here.
Oh my god. Sam and Nikki end up arguing in the desert, which is probably the most iconic scene in this movie.
Oh my god. Yeah. And I love the fact when you read that stuff like that is primarily improvised, it's like, yes, of course it is. First of all, these guys have known each other for generations. They can do this in their sleep.
Yeah, right.
But it's just that much rapid fire, you know, and it's all just hurling insults at each other.
Yeah.
You know, hilarious. And yeah, it's Nikki basically telling Sam that you're fucking up. You're making trouble back home. This isn't about you and your fucking country clubs. We're out here to rob these fucking people. This is about making money, plain and simple. We're skimming from the casinos. We're skimming from the people. We're robbing the fucking people. This isn't about you getting a fucking license.
Yeah, right.
You know, Sam was very comfortable in his legitimate world.
Right.
He didn't understand who he fucking actually worked for after a while. You know, I mean, you get the scene where he's talking to the reporter, but in the I am the boss scene.
Yeah.
It's like he actually believed that after a while.
Yeah,
because he got so insulated and he got so comfortable and made so much money.
Right. And well, and it just shows you how this is probably why I think that this movie is my favorite over Goodfellas.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say Goodfellas is bad, because it's very
good. It's really not.
but you know, everybody in that movie knows that they're a bad guy.
Right.
Whereas Sam in this movie, and is kind of a departure from a lot of De Niro characters, he's not. Mm-hmm. He's not really a bad guy. He's like, this is the opportunity I was given.
He doesn't want to be.
Yeah, and I don't want to be.
He out because of his skill set, he worked for bad people.
Right.
And he didn't want to, clearly.
Right.
Because the first second he got, he went out to Vegas, he got married and he got a kid and all this stuff.
Right.
And even in that, you know, even in the narration over his wedding, he was like, yeah, people don't think people didn't tell me about her, but I said, fuck that, I'm Sam Rothstein, I'll change her.
Right.
No.
Yeah.
You won't.
Right.
Because she doesn't want to.
Right.
And just like Nikki doesn't want to. And the bosses back home
don't want
to. Aren't going to change.
Yeah.
You're the only one that wants to go legit in this situation
here. Yeah, right.
And it's not going to happen.
No. And so, yeah, he basically tells Nikki, like, hey, you got to leave Vegas. You got to leave Vegas.
Well, who did he say that? I want to say it was probably the Pescano guy.
Right. Because
he was the one that they kept sending to Vegas. And like we said in the open, he was the one that kept all the notes and all the records. And what are you going to keep records for? You're going to pay taxes?
Yeah,
like,
right.
It's a good fucking point.
It is.
It is a good fucking point.
It is a good point.
You know, like, you're going out there and you're having a good time on my fucking dime. What? No records. And, of course, he did, which, of course, ruined the whole deal. But I think it was him he was talking to, and he's like, this was even before Nikki and Ginger started doing anything. Right. It was just Nikki was every time Sam was mentioned, either in the paper or on the TV news, Nikki was mentioned alongside him.
Right.
And it's basically like boyhood friend, mafia hitman. It's like, shit.
Yeah.
You know, and they got the banker coming over the house because Nikki was making so much money robbing people that he had to do something with it.
Right.
So he puts it into legitimate investments with the banker.
Yeah.
And then that goes south.
Of course.
Brings the banker back over to Sam's house.
Yeah.
Threatens to bash his head in with a bat, go to jail, come out when he's coming out of his coma, bash his head in again.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's like, okay, cool. You just scared him, and Sam's like, he's going to run to the fucking FBI.
Yeah.
And what happens? They're sitting there Sam's having his nice little patio meeting with the gaming commission.
Yep.
Nikki's playing golf, and the fucking federal agents run out of gas because they've been following him for so long.
Yeah, right.
And what's he do? Of course, $100. Anybody hits the fucking plane.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Yeah,
right. As you do.
Yeah, and so that's the big problem. The FBI starts getting involved. Ginger, her alcoholism gets terrible, so she basically ends up getting, like, super paranoid and just like, I'm leaving, right? Well, I guess not paranoid.
She dives deep into drugs.
Yeah.
And it's mostly about the Lester Diamond thing. That's what really set her off.
Oh,
like him getting his ass whipped really upset her because, again, it's a tricky thing with Sam because he married her because she was beautiful,
right?
Excited him,
right?
But he didn't realize that she's not a good person,
right?
And she even says it. I've been with Lester since I was a kid,
right?
Creepy, different time, no judgment,
right?
But she's been basically with this pimp since she was a teenager. You know, he even says it on the phone, the first time I saw you when you were 13 years old. And it's like, whoa!
Yeah, right. Oh, yikes.
Anyway, different time, different her. But so she was really like, I mean, she was all in on this Lester Diamond thing. And when he got his ass whipped, it was like beating up a member of her family. And she dove deep into pills. I mean, he was even talking about the ulcer pills. He's like, I take a half of these when I'm in extreme pain and I had a 3-month supply and it's gone.
Yeah, right.
It's like she went deep into that pill thing. And that set her down that road, and drugs and alcohol and poor choices went on and on and on and on and on.
Right.
Until she started to become a problem.
Yeah, right.
You know?
She's going to take the kid. They're going to run to Europe.
The first attempt was, her and Lester taking the kid and whatever jewels she could muster together and took some money out of the bank, I think, as well.
I believe so, too.
And tried to take off, and, you know, that lasted until it didn't.
Right.
And then they, you know, Sam finds him.
Yep.
Send the kid home, and she comes with the kid.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's like, all right, you're gonna go do you.
Yeah. Right.
You know, but send my fucking kid home.
Right.
Because you guys are junkies. You're doing a shitload of drugs. Whatever you're doing, just send the fucking kid home.
Yeah.
So then when they come back, Ginger and the kid, and he straps on a beeper.
Yeah.
And that lasted all of 6 hours.
Yeah, right.
He's like, I've been beeping you all day. I love the beeper.
It's a big...
If you're watching on video, it's like as big as this water bottle.
It's huge. It's the 80s.
It's like a 6-inch fucking beeper.
Yeah.
So she says she threw it out.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. And then, you know, tries to check her.
Yeah.
What'd you do? Where'd you go? I went to dinner with so-and-so. Okay, what'd she have? Cool. Now call her and have her say it on the phone. I'll be on the other line.
Yeah, right.
Can you do that?
Yep.
And then that starts another fight.
Yeah, of course.
There was just so much, like, she'd get caught in a lie, and then she'd start a fight, and that was when she started taking off and going to Nikki's, because he had a restaurant.
Right, right. So she ends up building that relationship with him.
Which, it was Jerry and Anthony, I believe, but they actually did have an actual affair.
Yeah, of course.
So, I mean, like I said, very surprisingly, a lot of Casino is a true story.
Yeah, a lot of Casino is a true story, which is very interesting.
So she starts getting involved with Nikki, which is starting to cause even more problems back home. And when Frank Vincent is the one bringing Nikki's kickbacks to the bosses.
Right.
And he's like, each time he went back, it was lighter and lighter. He didn't know if he was going to get kissed or killed. And then all of a sudden he gets sit down and it's like, is the little guy fucking his other wife? It's fucking Sam's wife. And it's like, ugh. And he, and even Frank Vincent's narration, he's like, I knew lying would get me killed.
Right.
But I had to do it. Because it would, because if I told the truth, it would get everybody killed.
Right.
So he lies. He said, I haven't seen anything like that.
Yeah, right. Which kind of feeds into it a little bit.
Keeps it going. You know, they keep. And then the FBI starts catching the two of them together.
Right. And now it's.
And the drugs. And the and Nikki's into drugs now. And he's getting sloppy. And they start shooting up cops' houses because they shot one of their guys because he had the sandwich.
Right.
In that great fucking scene with the Satisfaction.
Yep.
Oh, I love that song. And it was fantastic. But again, everything is just spiraling completely out of control.
Oh, absolutely. Ultimately leading to Ginger just basically crashing a car into the house.
Yeah.
It's like inches away from going through the front door.
He had her he brought her back home like probably four times in the movie.
Right.
Each time lasting shorter than the last.
Right.
And each time the blow up became bigger and bigger. I guess that falls under as you do. But yeah, so she comes back drunk, drugged, zero fucks.
Oh yeah.
He's got Don Rickles with a shotgun in the back.
Yeah.
And it's just she's banging into his car. She's driving into the car, drives up the driveway, it's just a mess. She makes another scene. The cops get called. She goes rummaging. She wants to get her stuff.
Right.
I just want to get my stuff and leave. All right, give her 5 minutes, and the cop goes with her. She steals the key to the
safety deposit box, so she can get the rest of the $2 million.
Because at this point now, she's also scheming. It's not that she's just fucking Nikki.
Right.
It's not just
scheming together.
Like, he's not even being, like, the neutral friend here. It's just like, no, we're scheming together because there's $2 million in cash and probably $1 million in jewels in this bank.
Yeah, and I need to get it.
And help me get it, you'll get a taste.
Yeah, right.
Is basically what's happening.
And then she basically ends up just getting arrested and turned into a material witness because...
Yeah, kind of.
Like, yeah, basically.
I mean, what ultimately happened was the Pescano deli scene where the FBI had a wire in there and he was going off to his mom. He was venting to mom.
Yeah, right.
He's like, I'm going out to Vegas every day and blah, 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 blah. And he starts naming everybody and Green and fuck this guy.
And this guy. Yeah.
And just basically gives them their case.
Right.
And all they had to do was then arrest him, which he drops dead of a heart attack as they're arresting him.
Yep.
Find his books with all of the expenses.
Yeah, everything.
And bring the case together. Right. Ginger, just like the real person, wasn't an important witness to them because they had everything.
Yeah, they already had.
They had the tapes. They had the books. They had people flipping at this point. And she did in real life also die of a drug overdose, which is kind of what they show at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
They make it sound like it was a murder hot shot type of deal, but it was a drug overdose. Read into that however you want to.
Yeah, as you do.
And another real thing about that ending was there was a mobster that was tracked down in his home in Costa Rica and killed.
Okay.
As they did in the movie. So we start just...
So
Everybody starts falling apart.
Yeah, everything starts falling apart. The FBI basically closes down the casino. Nikki takes off so that he can't leave, and then there's the attempted assassination of Sam.
Yeah, to which he also called amateur hour, which means it wasn't authorized by the bosses back home.
Right,
alluding to maybe it was Nikki, maybe it was planned before all this went down, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah,
who knows? Maybe Lester Diamond's coming back from revenge. I think that's the sequel. He runs into Will Hunting, who's already on the run from Boston. It's a whole crossover thing.
And he's a part of a secret government agency.
Exactly. But again, another true part of the real life story.
Yeah.
The actual Rosenthal was the guy's actual name, survived a car explosion.
Yeah.
Bombing, I guess you could say.
Yeah, it was a bombing because I think he explained it, and I think it's accurate to what actually happened. This particular car has a reinforced, like, underplate.
This model of the Lincoln that only people in the factory would know, there was just this metal plate under the driver's seat that wasn't under the passenger seat. They clearly put the bomb under the passenger seat.
Right. And so
it saved his life. It gave him that extra split second to jump the fuck out of the car.
Yeah, to get out of the car before it like really engulfed. Right. So, you know, yeah, he still suffered some burns, but, you know.
And then, he comes out of, Nicky comes out of hiding, much like the actual Anthony Spilotto did. And him and his brother, in the movie, in real life, got beaten to death with baseball bats and buried alive.
Yeah, that's the brutal.
That was grisly.
It's grisly, because the whole idea is that they think that Nicky had tried to kill Sam, and that wasn't authorized, so...
It was also, and it was explained, they were wild, they were loose cannons.
Right, you had to tie up the loose ends.
And it's just... He wasn't worth the risk.
Yeah, it wasn't worth the risk anymore. Yeah.
So his buddy, Frankie Marino,
played
by Frank Vincent, was the one that fucking beat him down.
Yeah, so...
Brutal.
It's brutal. That scene in the cornfield.
And he was motherfuckering him, too. He's like, you and your fucking bro... Like, it's like, because he's been the one that's had to go home every time.
Right.
You can understand his frustration.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like, you've been putting me in danger this whole time, asshole, while you're fucking that guy's wife, who was a junkie anyway.
Yeah.
Now, here's my thought, and as we summarize the movie. I feel, because it's long, and I was thinking about this today, and I'm like, how would this... Because you would need a major plot point to be taken out.
Right.
Is Ginger that important?
Ginger is not that important. And she would be an ancillary character, and we would tone down her stuff way more.
I mean, if Sam never got married and you just never, she was not a character in this story, could it have been as effective of a movie? Now, I think Sharon Stone did a fantastic job.
Yeah, Sharon Stone was awesome.
And I love her in the movie. I love the character in the movie. But if we're just talking, if we're poking holes, is she necessary?
No, she's not.
You need Sam. You need Nicky.
Yeah, you need Sam and you need Nicky. I would play up the... Like, I would tone down the FBI a little bit, and I would upplay the break in relationship between Sam and Nicky more.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I would go.
But you could cut an easy half hour, 45 minutes out of this movie if you lose Ginger.
Yeah, you could.
Because there's all those dinners and all the fights in the house and all the stuff. And it's just like, all right. Because like I said, it happened four times in the movie.
Yeah, it becomes a central plot point is his relationship. And really, ultimately, it doesn't mean... Like, the only thing that...
It really didn't mean anything until the third act.
Right, and...
And at that point, they were going down anyway because of fucking Piscano in the deli.
Yeah, right.
So, did they really need her?
No, they didn't really need her.
It was just we need a woman.
We need a woman. we need a sexy woman to be in this movie, to be eye candy.
And it did, and I will also say it did humanize Sam.
It does.
You can tell he's someone who does want a family, and he does want to settle down and live a normal life.
Right.
Where, I guess, if there wasn't a wife and a kid... part to his story,
it's not as effective.
There would be the argument, well, he's just another one of these mobsters. Maybe he's a little softer than Nicky, but he's still just one of these guys.
Well, it also just stacks him up a little bit, and it does a lot for his character development in terms of what he's trying to accomplish as, like, I want to be legitimate, and I want, like, I wish I could quit the mob and then just work at this casino.
Right. He really did, too. And that's what he ended up doing. He went back in the end to being a bookmaker.
Yeah.
Running a sports book.
Yeah, San Diego, of all places.
Yeah, exactly. Why not?
It's nice.
Nice weather all year round.
Yeah. So that's where he ends up. And it's funny because I'm pretty sure that's how the monologue ends, is like, I completed the circle or something like that.
Yeah.
I think the actual quote I ended up right back here where I started, or something like that.
Because they kicked the mob out of Vegas.
Right.
Corporations bottom up. They Disneyland the hell out of the whole Vegas. It's a place for families and senior citizens and penny slots and shit like that. It's like, it's not old school Vegas anymore. And you had to go somewhere.
Right.
He still has this skill. So he went back to the only thing he really is good at.
Right.
And that's making book.
Yeah. Good for him.
Right back where I started.
I really like this movie. I think this kind of also ties into something that I'm very excited about, is the upcoming The Irishman.
Yeah.
The everybody's getting back together. The band is getting back together with Scorsese for a Netflix movie.
And it's going to be interesting because in the last few weeks especially, I know Steven Spielberg came back out against Netflix and movies like that because he doesn't. He feels that they're cheating in the award season.
Yeah,
well, because he's been on this for years. Yeah. This has like been his campaign for years, and I think what he is seeing was Roma, and then The Irishman coming down the pipe, and he's like, he doesn't want, and this part of it. Part of it's old man yells at clouds.
Right.
Part of it I completely understand because he feels they're killing the theater experience, which I still enjoy. And that part of it, I'm like, yeah, I do like to go to the movie theater and watch a movie.
Yeah, but at the same time, you're looking at the presenting sponsor of that movie show, the radio version on North Shore 104.9, Showcase Cinema, and other theaters are combating that by making a subscription model for their for their movies. And, you know, it's like
they're competing with your home, and they always knew that. That's why the chairs got better.
Right.
That's why the food got better. That's why they put bars in the theaters. That's why, you know, all this stuff. And now the subscription services.
That's the big one to me. The big one to me is that for the price of, and this isn't like an actual plug, right? For Showcase Cinemas.
That's the next show.
That's the next show. But it's like, you know, between Movie Pass and Stubbs A-List and Showcase
subscribe,
you know, you basically, for the price of one ticket to a movie, you get multiple, whether it's one a week, three a week, two a week, three a month, whatever. You have the ability to now see these movies.
The more of the streaming services that came out and are coming out, they had to do something to compete.
Right.
Plain and simple. I mean, there's still going to be plenty of people. You know, Avengers is still going to make billions of dollars. It's not like they're going to lose that much money. But what he, and again, another point that Spielberg made that I do agree with is that what they've done with Netflix and stuff is they're taking more of the indie movies, which is then forcing the studios to just pretty much focus on the big event pictures like
Avengers or Captain Marvel
or Captain, you know, the comic book movies, the Transformer movies, whatever the big event picture is, they're focusing on that. And the independent movies are seeing less and less theater time. Which is why every year, the last few years in the Oscars, it's like, oh, I didn't know where to see this movie.
Yeah, because it's had a limited release.
But what Netflix has come out and said that they're going to do is, starting with The Irishman, is it's going to be the first Netflix movie to get a wide theater release.
Right.
And because technically, they can still do what they did with Roma. You put it in one theater in LA for 3 weeks, there's your award season.
Yeah, right.
Okay?
Yep.
But this is going to be, and it's not only just in theaters. They have to start releasing box office numbers, which Netflix has never done.
Yeah, right.
You know, they wanted to say it was maybe Bird Box.
Yeah,
where it was watched like in the first day by like X amount of millions of people, and they're like, it would have opened at $200 million. It's like, would it have? It's Bird Box.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Now they're going to have to actually start releasing, you know, box office numbers and stuff like that, especially when they put stuff like The Irishman.
Right.
And even the actors, De Niro has come out and said, yeah, this is a movie that deserves to be on the big screen and have the theater experience, because he's an old school guy as well.
Right. Well, I think that there's a time and a place, you know what I mean? Like, there are certain movies where it's like, yeah, I don't need to sit in a movie theater to watch this.
But there are also some where you're like, I want.
But there's some that I want.
I want to see this on the big screen. But also, on the flip side of the coin, The Irishman probably wouldn't have been made, or at least not made the way they're doing it, without Netflix's money. So you got to respect that side of the coin too.
Yeah, the budget's somewhere between $175 to $200 million.
Yeah, they're doing a massive. I read some of the CGI stuff they're doing. They're going to Industrial Light and Magic.
Oh wow!
Because they're gonna, all these characters, you know, De Niro, Pesci, Pacino, Keitel, are playing four generations of themselves. So 4 decades of this character without makeup.
Yeah.
So they're not doing like, they're not trying to de-age him with makeup. It's all done digitally.
Weird. Interesting.
So it's going to be very interesting. And my guess is it's going to be pretty fucking groundbreaking when it does come out.
Yeah. It's either going to work or it's going to be an abysmal failure.
I'm pretty confident with, you know,
if Industrial Light,
it's going to probably work. You got Scorsese going to Industrial Light and Magic, almost a $200 million movie.
Yeah, I think we'll be okay.
Gangster flick. It's like,
I think we'll be okay.
I think we're going to be okay. I think it's going to be pretty fucking spectacular.
Yeah.
So that is Casino, 1995's Casino, here on That Movie Show. Continuing this month of Vegas, next week, we're going to be on the edge of the desert when the drugs are about to take hold. We're doing Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, baby.
Oh, baby.
Hunter Thompson. This is one of my, I cannot say, favorite movies. I love this fucking movie.
Yeah, it's fun.
And it's never fun on TV.
No. Well, so it's too one of the bonkers.
It is so, so good. I cannot wait to tell my stories of doing Hunter S. Thompson all through Switzerland.
Yeah.
That's a real thing that happened.
Yeah. Right.
Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas coming up next week. Of course, you must subscribe to New Age Insiders Pop on literally all podcasting apps. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, wherever the hell you're going to do it. Social media at Mike Went, at Liam NAI, at Bill Neville NAI. Hashtag That Movie Show. And let us know that you want us to do a Ford Fairlane episode so I can stop doing dice and stop pissing off Bill and Liam.
I know, Christ.
And definitely any movie you want us to cover, any movies you want us to check out, please let us know on social media. Audio and video archives, newageinsiders.com.
Yep.
And, don't forget about our radio show.
Yeah.
It is on every Saturday morning here in Massachusetts. It's on North Shore 104.9. Yeah. You can also get it on NorthShore104.9.com. So you can listen on. It is on live Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. And then we get it up video and audio later in the weekend.
Yeah. It's going to be a ton of fun. No, I think that's it.
All right. Cool, man. Bill, thank you.
All righty.
See you next week.
Bye.